Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our Uncommon Economic Indicators Project continues on our website. It looks beyond the Dow at indicators you see in your life and your neighborhood. Post your Uncommon Economic Indicator stories or photographs or your Uncommon Economic New Year's resolutions to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And now the new chancellor of SUNY, who wants to redesign tuition hikes. Chancellor Nancy Zimpher, who took office earlier this year, is proposing a budget for next fiscal year that would begin to link tuition hikes to an index of inflation called the Higher Education Price Index. The goal is to depoliticize tuition hikes and stop the unpredictable lurches in tuition that result from the current system, such as in response to the state's fiscal crisis. Zimpher is also reacting in recent days to a national study that finds a persistent and troubling gap in graduation rates at state universities around the nation affecting low-income students, especially blacks and Latinos. SUNY currently enrolls 440,000 students on 64 campuses across New York State. SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpher joins us now. Chancellor Zimpher, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Tell us first about the proposal for setting tuition hikes.
I think the term rational tuition is a little misleading because it always has to be unpacked. SUNY has a long history of actually not raising tuition except every blue moon when the tuition hike is huge and people are unprepared for it. So, you know, you have the right to enter a campus as a freshman in any of our 64 campuses and have a predictable understanding of what it's going to cost for you to come back as a sophomore, a junior, or a senior. And of course, retention is really the most critical aspect of our work. We want to retain students and we want them to complete to degree. So we are proposing that we be more thoughtful about this, that we be able to predict for parents and students what it's going to cost to get educated. And let me say, Brian, probably fundamental to this discussion is that the annual tuition for the State University of New York, undergraduate tuition for an in-state student next year will be $5,070.
It's still an incredible bargain. How does this higher education inflation index work, though? What does it actually measure?
Well, it's a cost of living index, and it monitors tuition across the country, so there's a peer element to it. And it's public versus private, so we actually selected of a number of indexes the one that was most conservative and most reflective of who we are as an institution. And by the way, this is something that we look at with City University of New York so that we can really be in a peer relationship with CUNY and also use a public perspective. So I think this is an index that's universally perceived to be a cautious and conservative one that looks at cost of living indicators but also looks at our peer environment. Because we want to stay competitive. We want to recruit more students.
Well, what are the biggest inflationary pressures on SUNY tuition? In fact, what are the biggest cost pressures on higher education in general that seem to make the cost of college go up faster than overall inflation every year?
Well, I think that's a great question, Brian, because 90-plus percent of our effort is personnel. We're really talking about people and their salaries. And so we have the same costs that any other business would incur around health care, about retirement benefits. And so when health care goes up, so do our costs. These are not costs that, by the way, are negotiated by SUNY. These are personnel issues that are negotiated for us by the state of New York. And so a big part of our budget is, in some respects, out of our control. Because A, we're largely about employing people, and B, the people costs are a part of what the state negotiates with our various unions and associations. And then we all know that what's driving up those costs is fundamentally related to health care. So, yes, there are increases, inflations in other service deliveries for things that we need done on our campuses, facilities maintenance. You've probably heard higher education people talk about the lag in just the rehabilitation and renovation of our buildings that were many of them built about the same time in the 70s, and then they're all needing help at about the same time. But the critical cost is our investment in people.
Yeah, although it's kind of funny. This is a year of general deflation in the United States. So if you were linked to this inflation index now, would tuition have to go down?
I think we'll see. If next year we look at this index and it adjusts downward, we're going to respond to that. But I want to reiterate that our tuition is of the most affordable in the country. And we've done everything we can over the years to manage this. And, of course, unfortunately, this is a time when the state's commitment to support public higher education is compromised by the revenue problems we have as a state. And that's why the strategic plan for SUNY is so important, Brian, because we think we can be a positive engine for rebuilding the state's revenue base.
Nancy Zimpfer, the chancellor of the SUNY system, my guest on WNYC. I read that enrollment has ballooned since the recession began. Is that because students who would have gone to private school are now turning to SUNY because their parents lost their jobs?
Well, it's interesting. I kind of call this New York trifecta. I think what's being discovered, which I believe has been true for the decades, is that the combination of access, that is to say 64 campuses across the state of New York, and quality, you can get what you want at these institutions and a very fine product indeed, is matched with affordability. So maybe it took an economic crisis to bring some of that to bear, but in my 64 campus tour, Brian, where I literally spoke to hundreds of students, they just, to a person, talked about the quality of their experiences at our community colleges and at our four-year and research institutions. And so they told me that they came on the one hand because they could afford to come. As you listen to them, they talked about the quality of their program and the interaction with their faculty. And while you introduced us as 440,000, fact of the matter is, this fall we invited 464,981 students to our doors. And that can't all be just about the economy.
Denise in Stony Brook, you're on WNYC with SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpfer. Stony Brook is obviously a SUNY town. Do you teach there?
Do we teach
no,
there?
No, I'm asking Denise, the caller. Denise in Stony Brook, can you hear me? Denise, okay, Denise isn't paying attention. How about Jack in Forest Hills? Hi, Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, I have two suggestions. The first one is, if you want to make sure that freshmen know what their tuition is going to be for the rest of their career, then the state and you should get together to make sure that all tuition increases start with freshmen and are fixed for those freshmen 4 years in college so that there would be no increases for them and that new increases would start for new freshmen. The other suggestion is, I've taught for many years at colleges, and I know that if you simply increase the number of faculty dedicated solely to teaching so that they would teach, let's just say, four courses per semester, and they would be rated and hired on the basis of their teaching, not only would the students gain, but you would save a heck of a lot of money.
Jack, thank you for your call. Well, he raised a couple of interesting issues there. One, what about setting tuition for a four-year stretch for incoming freshmen, and they know it's going to be stable, at least for that four-year period?
Well, that's in the trade. That's called cohort tuition. It is done at some campuses, and as far as I'm concerned, Jack, to you, our caller, all modes of tuition innovation ought to be on the table. So one of the things I will do on behalf of your question is make sure that we've thoroughly reviewed this notion of cohort tuition, but I can tell you that I understand it. I know that it has been used in limited cases, and let's take another look at it. You and I agree, Jack, that it's about the predictability of the cost of college. And secondly, I do want you to know that the interesting thing about SUNY, and in fact, one of the things that really attracted me, is that we have, under one umbrella, community colleges, technical colleges, four-year baccalaureate institutions, research institutions, and medical schools, and the course load, varies incredibly across those institutions because the expectations for a faculty in a medical school and a research university vary in great respect from those where the primary responsibility is teaching. So we have many campuses where a four-course load is the norm. But we're also an engine for producing jobs and innovation, and you can't be the creative laboratory scientist, nanoscale technician, when your entire tenure is consumed with teaching. So we try to find the balance.
What do you say to a parent who's considering sending their kid to SUNY, or just anybody who's considering going to SUNY, and hearing that, well, this particular campus that I'm considering is really primarily a research university? Does that say to them, no, they're not there primarily to teach you?
Well, first of all, I don't say any campus is primarily one thing or another. We have a triadic mission that is longstanding, hundreds of years old, that we are committed to teaching, to research, and to community service. And increasingly, our students are working in the laboratories with our researchers. And you know what? We have researchers at our four-year institutions. We have some researchers at our community colleges, and they are pulling the students right into their research. It's way too easy to dichotomize this. It's not a dichotomy. It is a relationship. And I want to tell you, the research that we're generating is exactly what you want faculty members to take into the classroom, and you want them to take students from the classroom into our laboratory. So it's just a little messier than dichotomizing it. It all works together.
212-433-WNYC for SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpfer. And let's try Denise in Stony Brook again. Hi, Denise. Are you there?
Hi. Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi. I just had I'm wanting the chancellor to comment on the fact that, you know, she wants to link tuition raises to inflation, but not only are a lot of undergraduate students' parents, I'm sure their salaries aren't going up with inflation, but the graduate students who teach the bulk of the classes for SUNY, I mean, their contract hasn't been negotiated for 4 years, and their salaries haven't gone up with inflation either. So, I mean, I'd just be curious what she has to say with that.
Chancellor?
Well, Denise knows probably a lot more about the negotiation status of our graduate students than most of our listening audience, and knows that by the rules of negotiation, I really can't comment because we're at the table, literally, working, hopefully, on the culmination of a contract. I would consider that to be completed and good news, Denise, and so I hope that it comes to fruition in the near future. That said, our graduate students are one of the most valuable assets we have. They bring new ideas to the research environment. They are becoming professors in their own right, being socialized toward the work of a faculty member, and I think are a critically important component in our work. But the negotiation for a long-awaited contract is at the table, and I must honor that.
So Michael, on our comments page, also adds, the guest explaining away the inflation rate of colleges over many decades by saying that their main overhead is employees and the salaries are out of their control doesn't hold water. The increase for tuition being way above inflation is true for all institutions, public and private, for as long as anyone can remember. Want to respond to Michael, who posted on our comments page?
I think that there's a big divide between the conversation about the cost of college and the debt that some students accrue, many students accrue during the course of their college career, and the SUNY landscape are somewhat divided. In other words, let me repeat that next year's tuition for undergraduate students at SUNY will be $5,070. We have kept our tuition at the lowest possible rates for the longest time, perhaps, of any entity in public higher education. And we also discount tuition. We use every conceivable means to buy down the cost of college. New York has always been committed to the so-called TAP fund, which is an assistance program for students. So I'm thinking that whatever the public perception is, there's a SUNY campus very near you, which you can afford, and you can afford it over 4 years. And I think it's a minor, if you will, correction that our tuition is really moving about $300 over the next 2 years.
Tell us about SUNY's reaction to the report on low-income and underrepresented minority graduation rates. I see that nationwide, by the sixth year after entering as a freshman, just 45% of those minority and low-income students graduate, 45% compared with 57% of other students. How much of that, in New York's case, is immigrant students with English language problems?
I actually don't know, Brian, but I do know that that report, which was aired about a week ago, complimented the State University of New York for being in the high category of graduating low-income freshmen from four-year campuses. We keep book on these data. We have multiple programs to close the achievement gap. And I would add something that I think will really surprise our listeners, and that is that everybody has to understand that the leak in our education pipeline begins way before college, that there are students who are not getting through high school, not coming to college prepared for college work, and the State University of New York is engaged in a process of turning a great deal of attention to helping our colleagues in elementary and secondary schools get
more students
in the pipeline.
Because this is a national issue. We seem to have, as a nation, the world's best higher education system and a middling K through 12. And somehow we have to close that gap. But Janelle in Mineola has another theory for at least a contributor to this disparity. Hi, Janelle.
Hi.
What's your question?
I'm a student at SUNY Old Westbury, and I'm actually a transfer student. And the problem that I'm coming across as far as, you know, I understand inflation, and I'm taking out this debt to get a better education, but the classes that I'm trying to register for are not offered every semester. So in order to graduate, I have to wait until those courses come around again. And that causes a problem for me, because that means I have to be in school another year. So what's the solution to that? How is that being addressed?
Well, I really appreciate that question. First of all, I'm glad that you're still in the SUNY system and that you were able to transfer. But I can tell you, given that the last several budgets have downsized our budget by almost $500 million, the consequence of that is less frequently offered courses, larger class sizes, more part-time faculty, and that's really what we're trying to counter by trying to build some revenue base within SUNY that can protect the frequency with which we offer courses. We don't want you trapped in a situation where you have to go two more semesters to get one course left in your curriculum. And so we've got people working on that. I think there are solutions to that problem. But part of that casualty has been the pretty sizable reduction in state support for instruction. And we have to find some avenues for generating revenue. Rational tuition is one of those avenues, but not the only one. We've got other proposals before the state government to give us some more flexibilities that will help us generate revenues to reinsert more regularity within our course offerings. So I truly appreciate what you're saying. And, you know, you can't keep cutting budgets without ultimately affecting the quality of the programs we deliver. So we're also doing program planning across our 64 campuses to make sure that, you know, we're offering the right number of programs that we can really afford that get you graduated on time.
We're just about out of time, but since we've been talking so much about the finances and the tuition and the state, what's the basic breakdown, before you go, of how much of the SUNY budget comes from tuition, how much comes from tax dollars, and how much comes from other things?
Well, it's really about a third of our income that comes from the state, which is a combination of state support and tuition. We generate money from our auxiliaries, our residence halls, our bookstores, other programs that we offer, parking. I know people don't like to pay for parking, but we have to provide parking services. And then, of course, we are a huge generator of federal investment. But that is waning, and the ability of the state to make good on its earlier commitments in the previous decades to support public higher education have been diminished by this revenue shortfall problem. And while we didn't get to talk about it today, Brian, I would want our various publics to know that we are working on a huge strategic planning effort to be that economic engine for the state of New York that will help rebuild the revenue coffers. And maybe we can talk about that another time.
I hope so. SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpfer, thank you very much for spending the time today. Happy holidays.
Well, thank you, Brian, for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And in just a minute, we will meet one of the world's greatest mountain climbers, Ed Viesters. He has climbed peaks that very few other people have ever scaled. We'll talk about mountain climbing. Stay with us.